So these rookies are off to historically terrible starts. Trevor Lawrence has a QBR of 23.3. That's on a scale of 1 to 100. You can't have a zero. So from 1 to 100, his QBR is 23.3. Zach Wilson's is 22.1. And Justin Fields, God bless him, is 7.1. It couldn't be worse.
It's real easy to be optimistic about a rookie quarterback in early September. It's easy to be optimistic when the slate is blank and Mel Kiper's reports are still ringing in our ears and the dream of a better future has not yet been sacked 9 times in a single game. But it is October now, and the NFL's rookie class of highly touted first-round starters have collectively looked helpless. So today, Dr. Bill Barnwell is back to diagnose what's afflicting the future faces of these franchises and to tell us if there's a cure. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, October 1st. This is ESPN Daily. Bill Barnwell, I've missed you. I've missed your humor. I've missed your unbelievable energy. I've missed cheating off of the homework that you do.
Well, I'll tell you, Pablo, I, of course, miss hopping on every Sunday night with you. But this is a little bit nicer to tape at 10:40 in the morning Eastern.
Bill Barnwell writes about the NFL for ESPN and is the host of the Bill Barnwell Show podcast. Yeah, we're giving you a little bit better working conditions today because that happens to kind of be the topic of the column that you have written for ESPN.com, which is what are the working conditions like for all of these quarterbacks that are starting out in the NFL this season? Because, man, if you're just to describe the landscape of these rookie QBs right now, how does it look to you?
Pain? I mean, I would describe it as, you know, very similar to maybe the first half of Mad Max, if I'm thinking about.
Like the original or Fury Road?
Fury Road, like apocalyptic hellscape, I would say. Not much hope on the horizon.
But the guy that I want to start off here with, Bill, is Trevor Lawrence, because that guy is the prince who was promised. This is the number one overall pick. This is the guy with his golden locks. He is supposed to be the savior in Jacksonville. And what he is doing right now, riding the roller coaster that he's been on, it seems like turnovers have just been such a huge part of this story, as you have written. How do you assess that dynamic in Jacksonville right now with him?
It's really fascinating, Pablo. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, has 7 interceptions, a couple fumbles, has struggled this year, certainly. Also had some really nice throws. I mean, there's been sort of glimpses of the Trevor Lawrence that maybe we would have expected coming out of college. But I think what really hits me is that this is a guy going back to college who stepped in as a true freshman at Clemson and played great. Looked like he had been there for 4 years already and won a national title. This is the first time, to me, probably in Trevor Lawrence's football life, where the other guys are also as good as he is. And I think you're seeing him get used to that. There's been some plays where he has struggled maybe with the speed of the game. And I think actually the interception he threw that really turned the game against the Cardinals was a perfect example.
Carlos High pitches it back. They throw.
Where Trevor Lawrence threw a pick six on a flea flicker. And maybe in college, Trevor Lawrence has the time to make that throw. But in college, there's not J.J. Watt. And J.J. Watt got in Trevor Lawrence's face. And Trevor Lawrence saw a check down out of the corner of his eye, seemingly, and threw it at the last second before he was about to get hit by J.J. Watt. And Byron Murphy of the Cardinals jumped it for a pretty easy pick six, a throw that looked terrible in real time. But the exact sort of throw you don't have to make at the college football level. But I think this is the first time in his life that he hasn't been the class of the competition.
So as he adjusts to the talent level, the sheer talent level in the NFL, Bill, I'm curious how much of this does fall on his coach, Urban Meyer. What are his responsibilities in all of this?
I mean, his role, I think, is to make it as easy as possible for Trevor Lawrence to succeed. He can't, unfortunately, make it easier for Trevor Lawrence to deal with the speed of the NFL. That's only going to come with actual game NFL reps. But he can make it easier for the players around him. He can make it easier to pick up short completions. He can make it easier to manage protections. He can do all that stuff with the scheme, with the practice time. And frankly, I'm seeing a team that looks like they're not really ready to play over the first 3 weeks of this season. And I think that's my big concern, is that if this team does not feel comfortable in Urban Meyer's offense, well, that's why he was hired. That was the goal, right? Was to develop Trevor Lawrence and develop the guys around him. And I'm not totally sure after the first few weeks of the year that they're doing all that great of a job in doing so. The quote from Vic Fangio before the Broncos game, I thought was pretty instructive, where Vic Fangio met Urban Meyer and he said, or Urban Meyer said, quote, "Every week is like playing Alabama in the NFL," which like, it's one thing if you're playing the Chiefs, but Urban Meyer started his season with the Houston Texans. Like, yes. You know, if there had been any team in the NFL where we would have said before the year, oh, Alabama could beat that team, which is not true. And please don't yell at me on Twitter. But if there's any team in the NFL that was a laughingstock before the year, it was the Houston Texans, who, by the way, blew out the Jacksonville Jaguars. What happens when it gets harder as the season goes on?
So elsewhere, I mean, the guy that I think I'm even more worried about, Bill, in all of this is probably Justin Fields.
Here comes pressure. Myles Garrett again. Had him, lost him. Now Clowney just rips him down to the ground. They are sparing no punishment on Justin Fields. The rookie quarterback sacked 14 yards for the ninth time today.
How do you think this plays out if this is maybe not even the rock bottom that he might hit this season?
I mean, Pablo, I watch a lot of football, and I hate recency bias. I feel like in the NFL, when it comes to coverage, nobody can remember anything that happened 3 weeks earlier. I want to be clear that I'm saying this thinking about the broader history of stuff I've watched over the past decade or 15 years. Mm. This was the worst offense I've ever seen. I mean,
wait, can we make a banner for that? Can we get some like ESPN Daily imaging? This feels like a historic pronouncement, Bill. You've watched more football than any other human being that I have ever imagined, and you're telling me this team in this game was dead last.
We would. You remember the Arrested Development banner that they would keep propping up, where it was "Family, love, Michael"?
No, Michael, it's for you.
Take a look at banner, Michael.
If there was a banner for this game, it would have been "Bears hate Justin," because that's what it felt like for the majority of this game. I don't think the players were not playing their best. I just think this entire team was overmatched and didn't have answers for a decent Browns defense. Not a great Browns defense. It was truly, truly brutal. There were just so many problems in this game with the offensive line play, with the game plan, with Fields himself, who did not have a great game, I think he would tell you. But just everything about this was embarrassing and painful to watch.
Yeah, so let's get to the Nagy end of things, because on the one hand, Matt Nagy is the guy who did not want to start Justin Fields, perhaps because he had imagined circumstances like this. But on the other hand, given a circumstance like this, how do you assess how he prepared Justin Fields? How do you assess how he set Justin Fields up to do anything resembling success?
No, there was no setup. I mean, this again was someone just waking up and deciding, oh, there's a football game today. Like almost confused and afraid.
How does this happen, though? Because we're at the point here where people are, you know, offering conspiracy theories.
It made so little sense that the only theory I could come up with, it's a conspiracy theory, I admit it, is coach, I'm just asking the question, is coach doing it on purpose?
But what you're describing here is that you have no proof to offer that this was something that he had actually prepared for.
I mean, there's just a total inflexibility. It's not as if he just picked Justin Fields off of the fantasy football waiver wire on Thursday and started him at quarterback on Sunday. Like, he drafted this guy in April. You've had 5 months now to think about, okay, how are we going to use this guy? What role is he going to play? How is Justin Fields going to be different? And I think by the end of this game, it was really clear that Matt Nagy wasn't adjusting, because by the end of this game, there was one third down, a third and long in the fourth quarter, where I felt like it just totally encapsulated everything that was wrong with this game plan. The Browns came out and they were threatening a six-man blitz. They had two guys in the A-gaps, the spots on either side of the center. Just alerts should be going off in the quarterback's head. And if you're someone who's been in the NFL for 20 years, this is annoying. You don't want to get blitzed by more guys than you have, but there's something you can do. You bring someone else into the protection. You bring a tight end, for example, like Cole Kmet, who is on the field. You change the protection, and then you spot that and you act accordingly. And for Justin Fields, he doesn't have the ability to do that. Now, whether he just doesn't have the foresight to do that, which I'm a little skeptical of, or whether Matt Nagy just does not let him change the protection because that's not something he's comfortable with, that we don't know. But either way, Justin Fields does not have the tools to deal with this six-man pressure front. And what happened was the Bears didn't block it correctly. Their center, Matt Stenfuster, made the wrong call. And it ended with Jason Peters, the 39-year-old left tackle for the Chicago Bears, who has a torn ACL and I believe two torn Achilles in his past. A Hall of Fame player in his prime, but a guy who is hanging on for dear life at this point as an NFL left tackle, was left to block one of two different players. He had to set originally for Jadeveon Clowney, and then if Jadeveon Clowney was taken by somebody else, he had to block Myles Garrett, who had a free rush off the edge, and in fact went untouched to Justin Fields for a sack. This is a situation where you need to call a timeout, or more realistically, you need to throw out a play to begin with that has six or seven men in protection, so your rookie quarterback, the guy who's going to be the future of your franchise, probably there long after you're gone, does not get destroyed by a free rush by the best edge rusher in football. And yet that is exactly what happened.
So speaking of getting destroyed, Bill, I do want to get to the New York Jets here, because what we're seeing with Zach Wilson, their rookie quarterback, their ostensible savior, their future franchise cornerstone, what we're seeing is a lot of bad going on, but I actually want to try to start a little bit optimistic here. What would you say is going right for Zach Wilson right now?
Oh, you threw me off there, Pablo. I was not expecting to talk about things that went right for the Jets after three games. You spun me for a loop there.
There isn't a lot to say is what you're indicating.
No, that is me trying to buy time as I try to think about anything the Jets have done right through 3 weeks.
You can play some nice hold music here as Bill Barnwell is thinking, yes?
Yes, the former tech support call center employee
exactly.
in me was yeah. trying to think about how to stop for a second. I mean, I would say that Zach Wilson himself is throwing the football fine. I mean, I think he has looked like his arm is solid. I think he's looked like he's sort of handling an offense that is not doing anything right well. It's not like he is, you know, collapsing into a shell. He's still up for trying stuff. Like, he's still up for making plays. What's the only positive thing I can think of for Zach Wilson is that he's throwing much better to the sidelines than he is to the middle of the field. And he's 25 points higher in terms of QBR on throws to the sideline. In the NFL, that's tough to do.
Yeah, so let's get to what's wrong then, because clearly, Bill, you've done a very admirable job in trying to spin this to make Jets fans feel that much better. But the reality of it as you see it is what?
Okay, so let's think about what this offense wants to do. Because, you know, realistically, this is a Mike LaFleur-led offense. Mike LaFleur, the brother of Matt LaFleur, the former 49ers assistant. He comes from Kyle Shanahan's tree. Kyle Shanahan's offense is very straightforward. Like, half the NFL runs it at this point, so you're familiar with it. What they want to do is they want to run the ball really effectively. They want to use play action at a high rate and create big shot plays for the quarterback in the passing game. So that's the game plan. Let's see how it's going for the Jets. First and foremost, they are 24th in rushing DVOA, 23rd in expected points added per rush attempt. So rush offense, not all that great. Wilson is the worst quarterback in football on play action. So with no play action, the middle of the field has been clogged. Wilson is 31st in the NFL in QBR on throws over the middle of the field. Only Justin Fields has been worse. Sorry, Bears fans. Sorry, Justin Fields.
And still catching strays one topic later.
I just sacked Justin Fields during the taping of this broadcast, Bob. There's not even a football game going on. He just got up and said, you know what? Good rush, Bill.
So, Bill, I need you to turn upfield now, actually, because I got to get to Mac Jones and whether or not we're going to see more from Trey Lance after the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So I go north now to Foxborough, Bill, because that is where Mac Jones is. That is where the guy who kind of like looked like Tom Brady, if you squinted a little bit, is now in a very different place. Because he's preparing to face Tom Brady himself, the real thing. What are you seeing from Mac Jones right now? Where do we stand on how promising he actually looks?
Well, by the very low bar of the other quarterbacks in this rookie class, Mac Jones looks like a 15-year pro. But the problem, I would say, is that that 15-year-old pro is kind of Ben Roethlisberger in terms of what he is capable of doing. Of course, with Ben Roethlisberger, we know throwing the ball more than 15 yards downfield requires some sort of medical or supernatural intervention at this point of his career. Mac Jones has the arm strength to do that. The arm is not the issue here. The magic number that I always use for timing when it comes to quarterbacks is 2.5 seconds. Under 2.5 seconds, when the Patriots are using quick game, Mac Jones looked fine. He was 12 of 16 for 108 yards. They were moving the ball. It wasn't necessarily big plays, but I think that element of Mac Jones looking professional coming out of Alabama is what you saw. That offense is fine. I mean, that's totally reasonable, but you do need to take some shots downfield. And Mac Jones was asked to hold the ball for a little longer and take shots downfield. He just was not an NFL caliber quarterback at this point. He threw 35 passes, only 5 of them turned into first downs. On deep passes, passes the NFL defines as more than 16 yards in the air, Jones was 3 of 18 for 66 yards. The NFL Next Gen Stats would have projected him to hit 36.8% of those passes. He hit on 16.7%.
Why? Why is that dichotomy so glaring right now?
I think what it really boils down to are a couple of things. I mean, first and foremost, quick game is going to be simpler. You're not expected to read the entire field. You're not expected to run through your progressions. You're not expected to keep yourself upright in the pocket, make those sort of subtle steps to create space for yourself while you're throwing the football downfield. And the Saints are a very good defense. I think that comes into play as well. But the other element of this is a guy who at Alabama had superstars at every single position. And Mac Jones was a guy at Alabama who was waiting for his superstar receivers to separate and make plays downfield and make it obvious for him to throw, or to have such a total mismatch that he was comfortable throwing up a 50-50 ball to, you know, a guy who was going to be a top 10 pick in the NFL. And the Patriots do not have those guys. They're better than they were last year with Cam Newton, a quarterback, but they don't have great weapons at receiver.
Bill, this is the exact opposite of Urban Meyer saying that they have to play Alabama every week, basically, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. It's we don't get to play as Alabama every week for Mac Jones.
I want to turn here to the rookie quarterback who has not gotten the full-time job yet, but is a guy who we've seen under a spotlight because he gets used in fascinating ways. And I'm referring, of course, to Trey Lance with the Niners, because we saw him briefly, Bill. In Sunday's game versus the Packers, he gets that touchdown on the ground at the end of the first half.
They bring Lance in, and here goes the rookie around the left side, and in he goes for the touchdown.
it looks like we're going to get more of him. We don't get more of him. Instead, we get more Jimmy Garoppolo. And I'm just curious whether you think there should be more Trey Lance in general going forward at this point.
I would say there should be more, but I don't think there should be a move to him as the full-time starter just yet. I think Jimmy Garoppolo, we sort of know what we're getting at this point. A guy who is going to be not always all that consistent. A guy who does not necessarily have the ceiling of like a superstar quarterback, but a guy who can run the offense functionally. A guy who can be, like I said earlier with Zach Wilson, a guy who can hit the play action throws over the middle of the field and get the receivers in position to pick up yards after the catch. It's what the Niners want their offense with Jimmy Garoppolo to be. Now, it's going to change once Trey Lance takes over as the full-time starter. But for me, I would want to have practice time with that offense to run it in real time. I would not want to make that switch in the middle of a football game. So I don't think Trey Lance should have come in at halftime of that game for Jimmy Garoppolo. But what I think I would want to see more of from the Niners is more of Trey Lance as the red zone and short yardage quarterback. So far, he's been here and there in that role for a snap or two per game. I think you could make him something close to the full-time option in the red zone, the full-time option on any third and one or third and two, having Trey Lance in the game. We saw what Kyle Shanahan did when he needed a touchdown. He brought in Trey Lance for a one-yard touchdown run. I think that is extremely telling about how Kyle Shanahan feels about Trey Lance and in that role. And so for me, I think upping that snap count from maybe one or two per game to four or five per game, it's better for the offense and it's better for Trey Lance.
So I feel like I'd have my sports gas bag license revoked if I didn't ask you to wildly overreact in a very broad way here, Bill. So just in terms of like what you're seeing from this class of rookies, is there someone that you think is the most likely future MVP? And is there someone who is the likely opposite?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I will still go with Trey Lance as the guy who I think is most likely to win MVP because I just think he is best positioned. There are the best weapons of any team when it comes to these five teams who have rookie quarterbacks for Trey Lance. There's the best offensive head coach to work with in Kyle Shanahan.
His working conditions are the best.
Yes, he is in a much better place. And remember, I mean, the guy who won MVP from the class of 2018, Lamar Jackson, had not really played. He was playing the exact same role as a short yardage quarterback that Trey Lance was playing at this point. He didn't get into the lineup really until the second half of that season when Joe Flacco got hurt. And then, of course, the following year, you know, went supernova and won MVP. As for the guy who is going to bust, this is so sad. I don't want to put this on anybody, Pablo. My only comfort here is that I'm wrong, typically. And so knowing I can at least put a reverse jinx on someone else by jinxing myself, I will say Zach Wilson. Not because of anything that has to do with Zach Wilson, but just he's a Jets quarterback. And this is how it goes for Jets quarterbacks, unfortunately. I'm holding on hope for all of them, but I would lean towards the guy in the best situation as the possible MVP, and the guy who, to me, so far, is in the worst situation as the guy who will come up short of expectations.
Man, somewhere Justin Fields is so glad to hear that. He was like, I'm going to get sacked a third time by Bill on this podcast, but no. The last question here is a big picture question, Bill. Why? Why is this happening in this way? This landscape, this Mad Maxian dystopia that these rookies are generally living in. Is this happening because of anything particular to this season, this year? Why?
I don't think so. I think it's more just the reality of the NFL is that we're seeing more teams go with young quarterbacks. Because of the salary benefits of having a quarterback making $6, $7 million a year for 3 or 4 years, as opposed to having a veteran quarterback who isn't that good making $25 or $30 or even $35 million a year, more teams are taking that opportunity to go after that young quarterback. Maybe in years past, when it wasn't the same sort of salary structure, maybe there wouldn't have been five quarterbacks drafted in the first round. Maybe we only would have seen two or three in the first round and a couple go later in the draft. I don't think there's anything too meaningful to it. I think they're going to be better as the year goes along, but they are worse. I mean, that class of 2018, through 3 weeks, they had a collective QBR of 47.2. That's pretty decent, actually, for young quarterbacks. Through 3 weeks this year. The same quarterback's a 26.4 QBR. I do think it's going to get better, but I do think there's going to be a lot of growing pains along the way.
Bill Barnwell, the Alabama of ESPN Daily Guests, thank you for joining us again.
Pablo, you can play me whenever you want.
All right, coming up, a special request that I've been dying to make of you.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, as we've established, it is October now, obviously the most haunted of months, and sports is a world that very much believes in the supernatural. We're talking about ghosts and curses and all sorts of superstitions.
Sit down, come on, sit down. With 7 minutes in, no score. Come on, help turn the juju around.
I don't believe in juju, though.
Oh, come on, Mr. Excelsior. You want to be positive? Be positive. Sit down.
All right.
Come on.
For a second, I'll watch the beginning of the game.
He said you're good luck, honey.
What's that in your hand?
It's a
handkerchief?
Yeah.
That's OCD. That's crazy.
What OCD? I want my son to watch the game with me, so sue me. No, sit down. Come on. I want you to watch the game with me.
I do, but
I'm not superstitious. That's a small thing that I do.
And we know that many of you do pretty weird stuff in terms of these superstitions, too. So ESPN Daily wants to hear from you, yes, you, about your sports superstitions. Maybe you have to eat, like, the same pregame meal, maybe wear the same pair of socks, like, all season without washing them. My friend Katie Nolan would sit in the sink in her bathroom during Red Sox games, because that apparently would help them win. I just want to know what you guys do to make sure that things go your way. So call this number that we've set up. It is 424-438-0717 and leave us a message about the weird things you do. That's again 424-438-0717. We'll have that number in our show notes also, and I'll put it on Twitter so you guys can, you know, get confessional with us. We promise that, you know, we'll be gentle. So happy haunting, and in the meantime, I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Andre Soto, Christian Gardner, Julia Faust, Max Brodsky, Garrett Lang, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll talk to you Monday.